fierce fighting around Kharkiv continues. As President Volodymyr Zelensky says, Ukraine isn't getting enough military support. China launched what it calls punishment drills around Taiwan, staging mock attacks.
Chinese state media said dozens of fighter jets carrying live missiles were sent out, along with warships, and conducted mock strikes on high-value military targets.
And getting ready to honor veterans on the 80th anniversary of D-Day.
I still remember it like it was yesterday.
Today is Friday, May 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Russia's attack on Kharkiv continued on Thursday with missiles, artillery, and ground forces. President Volodymyr Zelensky chided Ukraine's Western allies for not providing enough military support to push back Russian attacks. Here's Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones.
Russia pounded Kharkiv with missiles on Thursday, killing at least seven people inside a printing house. It came as President Volodymyr Zelensky called out Ukraine's Western allies for failing to provide enough military support to rebuff attacks like these. Moscow's forces have hammered the northeastern city of 1.2 million for months. They launched a ground assault into the north of the surrounding region around 2 weeks ago, an offensive that Kyiv says for now has stalled on two lines of attack. Kharkiv Mayor Ihor Terekhov said Russia fired 15 missiles in and around Kharkiv.
You can see that the Russians hit the factory, which was a printing house. Books and workbooks were printed here. Unfortunately, it was during a work shift when the S-300 missile hit. It was a direct hit on a place where people were working.
The regional governor said there were no military facilities near this strike, in which officials said over 28 people were wounded. On social media, Zelensky chided Ukraine's international partners for failing to provide enough air defense systems or for allowing Ukraine to use allies' weapons to strike missile launchers inside Russia. Although shipments from the US's aid package have begun to arrive, Ukrainian forces have been outmanned and outgunned by Russia's military. Those in the northern districts of Kharkiv region say the fighting is more intense than the previous assignment in Bakhmut, the town in eastern Ukraine seized by Russia last year and reduced to rubble by months of fighting.
Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones. Sweden, NATO's newest member this week, announced a three-year plan to provide additional support for Ukraine totaling more than $7 billion. Sweden is training with NATO allies, including the United States, as concerns mount about Russia's growing aggression. VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief, Miroslava Gangadze, visited the Kvarn military base in Sweden.
At the Kvarn Swedish Army base, U.S. and Swedish forces honed their skills in urban warfare. In this training exercise, American soldiers simulate the liberation of a town occupied by Russians, played by Swedish forces. Johan Strom is Sergeant Major of the Swedish Armed Forces and head of the Swedish Army's Combat Training Center for Military Operations on Urban Terrain in Kvarn. Strom says this training facility is one of the most technologically advanced in Europe, equipped with the laser systems, simulators, and video cameras.
The uniqueness of this facility is that every building is a player in our simulated system.
This site was built 10 years ago to train in a combat realistic environment. Strom explains that Russia's war in Ukraine has prompted the Swedish military to intensify its training to enhance its defense capabilities.
The increased intensity of the war in Ukraine has been going on since 2014, and there's a more sense of urgency in Europe, in the world, and in Sweden.
Sweden has one of the strongest military forces in the region. The military base commander in Kvarn, Lieutenant Colonel Ola Sandberg, explains that his country has built up its forces for historical reasons, and he highlights their ongoing training and preparation efforts.
As a non-NATO member during the Cold War and as a non-aligned in a military alliance and also neutral, Sweden had to build up a strong military capability to be able to defend itself, and also a big military industrial complex to support that.
Now a member of NATO, Sweden is set to spend more than 2% of its GDP on defense this year. It aims to bolster NATO with its significant naval and air force capabilities and give the alliance control over the Baltic Sea and access to the Arctic. In addition to technological advantages, the Swedish military benefits from a gender-neutral conscription-based system, which provides a broader pool of soldiers and officers, says battalion commander Lieutenant Colonel Liridona Doughty. Around 4 million Swedes, almost equally male and female, and ages 17 to 47, are considered fit for military service.
There's no difference between the genders, and that's actually the strength of the Swedish Defense Forces. Doesn't matter what kind of gender you are, that matters is what kind of task you are. What are the tasks that you're going to solve?
The military officer, mother of three boys and expecting a fourth child, says the Russian assault on Ukraine has rapidly changed the security environment in Europe, which concerns her. She says her boys might have to become soldiers, but she and her country are doing all they can today, hoping to ensure there won't need to fight in the future. Miroslava Gungadze, VOA News, Kvarn, Sweden.
China launched what it called punishment drills around Taiwan on Thursday in what it said was a response to, quote, separatist acts. Reuters correspondent Gabe Singer reports China sent heavily armed warplanes and staged mock attacks on the island.
Taiwan mobilized its military on Thursday and said it was confident it could protect the island. That's after China the same morning started 2 days of what its military called punishment drills around Taiwan, which it said were both a response to, quote, separatist acts of Taiwan independence forces, as well as a, quote, stern warning against the interference and provocation by external forces. The exercises come just days after Lai Ching-te took office as Taiwan's new president, a man Beijing detests as a separatist. China's military said the drills involving the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Rocket Force are intended to test its forces' quote, joint real combat capabilities. Chinese state media said dozens of fighter jets carrying live missiles were sent out, along with warships, and conducted mock strikes on high-value military targets. They published a map of the drill zones in five areas all around Taiwan and the islands Taiwan controls near the Chinese coast. Taiwanese officials told Reuters those areas were outside its contiguous zone, which is 24 nautical miles from the main island's coast. Taiwan's defense ministry said that it had dispatched forces to areas around the island, and the presidential office condemned what it called China's unilateral military provocations. Lai has repeatedly offered talks with China, but been rebuffed. He rejects Beijing's sovereignty claims over the island and says only Taiwan's people can decide their future. China last staged large-scale war games near Taiwan in 2022 and 2023. It again ramped up military pressure on the island in the lead-up to Lai's inauguration, with fighter jets staging mock attacks on foreign vessels, while ships and planes encroached close to the island. Unlike similar exercises conducted in the past, China's military has classified this latest round of drills in a way that leaves room for potential follow-ups.
Reuters correspondent Gabe Singer. The United States does not recognize the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court, and there is no equivalence between Israel and Hamas. That's what U.S. President Joe Biden said on Thursday.
Well, we've made our position clear on the ICC. We don't recognize the jurisdiction of the ICC the way it's being exercised, and it's that simple.
The United States is not a member of the court, but has supported past prosecutions, including the ICC's decision last year to issue an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin over the war in Ukraine. We're following these other stories from around the world. The United Nations General Assembly declared July 11th an International Day of Remembrance of the 1995 Srebrenica genocide in a resolution on Thursday that was strongly opposed by both Serbia and Bosnian Serbs. A two-story restaurant building collapsed on the beach in Palma de Mallorca on Thursday, killing at least four people and injuring 16 others in the tourism hotspot in Spain's Balearic Islands, according to the country's national police. Thousands of mourners packed the streets of the Iranian holy city of Mashhad on Thursday for the funeral of Ibrahim Raisi, who was killed 4 days ago in a helicopter crash. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 presidential election, under the Biden administration, U.S. veterans have received more than $5.7 billion in expanded health care benefits. But former President Donald Trump argues veterans were better off when he was in the White House. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias looks at what the veteran population will likely need from the next president.
Nearly 890,000 U.S. veterans exposed to toxic substances during their service and their survivors have already benefited from the PACT Act, a law that President Joe Biden signed in 2022 to expand health care and benefits to those affected. On Wednesday, Biden announced that 1 million PACT Act claims have so far been granted.
Trouble breathing, cancer, brain cancer. Folks, you suffered long enough. You shouldn't have to prove that your illness came from their service. But thanks to the PACT Act, you don't have to prove it now.
Biden underscored that more than 30 bipartisan laws supporting veterans, their caregivers, and survivors had been passed under his administration.
We've increased resources to end veteran homelessness, hired and trained hundreds of additional mental health providers, specifically to help veterans end the silent scourge of veteran suicide.
Donald Trump, Biden's Republican rival in the 2024 presidential race, argues veterans fared better when he was president. Trump expanded on his argument in a video posted on the online video platform Rumble back in November.
We have 33,000 veterans in this country who are homeless and living very poorly, I might add, and it's a shame. We helped them a lot during my 4 years, and it's all been dropped.
If he returns to the White House, that will change, Trump added.
On day one, I will sign an executive order to cut off Joe Biden's massive spigot of funding for shelter and transport of illegal aliens and redirect a portion of those savings, a very large portion, I might add, to provide shelter and treatment for homeless American veterans.
The National Association of Social Workers hailed improvements to veterans' well-being under both the Biden and Trump administrations. The latter, for instance, increased veterans' access to support and care outside the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. But challenges remain, says Anthony Istrit, the CEO of the National Association of Social Workers via Skype.
Individuals have been experiencing issues with access in terms of entering their system, but also barriers in terms of paperwork, significant wait times, and really just a lack of present workforce.
Estrid noted that the next U.S. president will need to pay special attention to facilitating veterans' access to mental health care, especially considering the provider shortages the field is currently experiencing. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
The Honorable William Jefferson Clinton, 42nd President of the United States, and the Honorable Hillary Rodham Clinton, 67th Secretary of State of the United States.
Guests arriving at the White House as President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden hosted Kenyan President William Ruto and First Lady Rachel Ruto for a state dinner at the White House on Thursday. The dinner was lit by 1,000 candles and a menu of heirloom tomato soup, butter poached lobster, smoked beef short ribs, and a white chocolate dessert. Earlier in the day, after a meeting, President Biden and President Ruto at the White House held a joint news conference, pledging a new era of partnership on technology, security, and debt relief.
I'm proud to announce we're working with Congress to designate Kenya a major non-NATO ally. That's a fulfillment of years of collaboration
We're launching a new era of technological cooperation between the United States and Kenya. That means new partnerships with industry, artificial intelligence, semiconductors, and cybersecurity companies.
President Ruto.
My visit takes place at a time when democracy is perceived to be retreating worldwide. The accelerating drift towards regimes indifferent to democratic values is a deep concern to us, and I believe it is time the U.S., working with Kenya, deploys its capabilities and rally like-minded democratic countries to set up the course for democracy.
Kenya is one of Africa's strongest democracies. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. So we're knocking on the door of the 2024 Atlantic hurricane season, which officially begins on June 1st. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has projected an exceptionally active Atlantic hurricane season this year, highlighting that the El Niño and La Niña phenomena will play a significant role in influencing the season's storm activity.
17 to 25 named storms with a top sustained wind of at least 39 miles per hour. Of these, 8 to 13 are forecast to become hurricanes with maximum sustained winds of at least 74 miles per hour. And 4 to 7 are forecast to become major hurricanes, that is Category 3 to 5, with maximum sustained winds of at least 111 miles per hour.
Warm sea temperatures and falling wind shear conditions at the height of the hurricane season in August and September are expected to contribute to more and stronger storms this year. There is a weather phenomenon happening over Mexico, Central America, and parts of the U.S. South. It's called a heat dome. More on this now from AP correspondent Norman Hall.
Millions of people in sweltering temperatures strain energy grids and resulted in iconic howler monkeys in Mexico dropping dead from trees. Scientists reported more than 130 howler monkey deaths in Mexico's southeast jungles. Meteorologists blamed extreme conditions on a heat dome, an area of strong high pressure that blocked clouds from forming and caused extensive sunshine and hot temperatures near and above 100 degrees, all the way to the U.S. South from Miami to South Texas. I'm Norman Hall.
Bulgaria is one of the top global producers of a fragrant oil that comes from flower petals. Farmers this week were busy harvesting the petals about a month earlier than historic norms, due to climate change that has ushered in warmer and more humid springs. As space tourism continues to evolve, so does the ride itself. One company taking people to the edge of space is planning a meal worth the $500,000 price tag. Here's VOA's Arash Arabasadi.
Danish Michelin-starred chef Rasmus Munk and Florida startup Space Perspective are planning an unmatched dining experience aboard that company's spaceship Neptune. Munk says menu items will include glow-in-the-dark stars made from aerogel and jellyfish protein, along with pieces of edible space junk from a satellite. Six guests already have reservations aboard the spaceship Neptune for late 2025, where they'll dine just shy of the edge of space. The menu offerings and experience run $495,000 per ticket. It's a far cry from the beef and liver the first astronaut in space squeezed from an aluminum tube and what most astronauts in space today call food. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And finally,
I still remember it like it was yesterday.
June 6th, 2024, will be the 80th anniversary of the D-Day landings along the Normandy coast of France. On Thursday, the Eternal Flame arrived in New York City after traveling across the Atlantic Ocean from France on board the Queen Mary II. The flame has been burning on the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier under the Arc de Triomphe in Paris since November 11th, 1923. The young French ambassadors will escort the flame to Arlington Cemetery in Washington, where it will burn until June 6, 2024, the 80th anniversary. At the New York Cemetery, where the flame arrived, 104-year-old U.S. veteran and D-Day survivor Stephen Mellencamp said, "This year is a special year.
I just tell people, and anybody who's listening, I'm here, Don is here, and the rest of us are here because friends of us, the ones that are at the American Cemetery at Colville, they made it possible for us to be here and for us to have all this great, and all you people having this great 80 years of great, great life and vitality that you have."
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for being with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The repression of the Nicaraguan people by the regime of President Daniel Ortega and his wife, Vice President Rosario Murillo, continues. The U.S. State Department's recently released human rights report in Nicaragua noted, individuals linked to the government of President Daniel Ortega Saavedra carried out a campaign of harassment, intimidation, and violence toward perceived enemies of the regime, such as former political prisoners and their families, farm worker activists, pro-democracy opposition groups, human rights defenders, private sector leaders and clergy, other religious actors, and church-affiliated civil society groups. In response to this repression and to the regime's callous exploitation of vulnerable migrants, the U.S. State Department is imposing visa restrictions on an additional 250 members of the Nicaraguan government, including police and paramilitary personnel, penitentiary officials, prosecutors, judges, and public higher education officials. In addition, the U.S. Treasury Department designated three Nicaragua-based entities, a Russian military training center that supports the Nicaraguan National Police in its abuse and prosecution of political opponents, and two gold companies that produce revenue for the Ortega Murillo government. The United States remains committed to using our tools to support the Nicaraguan people, including by constraining the Ortega Murillo regime's ability to fund its oppressive and destabilizing activities, said Treasury Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence Brian Nelson. Besides the export of gold through corrupt government-affiliated companies, the regime is also raising funds on the backs of desperate migrants. Among other tactics, it sells visas at Nicaraguan airports that require migrants to leave the country in 96 hours. In this way, the regime profits from facilitating irregular migrants who in many cases make their way to the United States. In response, as National Security Council spokesperson Adrian Watson said in a statement, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, State, and Treasury have jointly issued a policy alert to travel companies with information about the ways smuggling networks and transnational criminal organizations prey on vulnerable migrants, ongoing U.S. actions to hold these malicious practices actors accountable, and key steps that the travel industry can take to avoid complicity in the exploitation of migrants. The United States urges the Nicaraguan regime to cease its repression of the Nicaraguan people and stop its cynical exploitation of vulnerable migrants. The new measures show the United States will continue to hold the regime accountable for its abuses.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.